Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, from the studios of Teeing It Up in the swamps of Jersey, this is Teeing It Up for Monday, September 26th, the year 2016. It's a Monday. It's the Monday of the Ryder Cup weekend, and it's the day after we lost our friend and the great ambassador to the game of golf, Arnold Palmer. He's everyone's friend, even though I never met him. And we will look back on his life and career with Ryan Ballingy coming up in a couple minutes. But promises are promises, and we promised that our buddy Luke Morrow would be up on the top of the show today to join us on Teeing It Up. Hello, Luke.
Good evening.
Luke had a wedding yesterday, and he told me some great things about the wedding off radio, off air, that I couldn't, that I wanted so bad to get on the air. So here's why Luke's on the show. Luke, as some of you know, became an ordained minister on the web, via the web, a couple of years ago. Is that the right term, by the way, ordained minister?
Yep, you got it.
Okay. Yeah, and the wedding he was supposed to do yesterday was scheduled for eleven fifteen, and got switched to what time?
7:15.
And the reason was
Because of the natural lighting. It was a wedding that took place on the beach, so for the pictures, they felt it'd be much better earlier in the day at 7:15, as opposed to when the sun was up at 11, as it was originally scheduled. And it ended up working out really nicely, because that's exactly when the sun was setting, so it made for a nice setting and backdrop on the beach.
Wait, this is a 7:15 p.m., not a.m.?
No, a.m. The sun
right,
was
okay.
Rising, I should, yeah.
Right, okay. So, 7:15 in the morning, you did the Stetson home game the night before, the Stetson football game, and I had to wake up and make this transition to a wedding. How was that?
It was quick. The game was at 7 o'clock Saturday night, the football game. Got home probably 11:30, and then, I'm a night owl to begin with, but I can never go to bed exactly, right when I get home. So I was up until probably maybe 1:30, got up at 6 and rode over to the beach and did the wedding. But, with the ceremonies like this, they're short and sweet. That's what the couples usually look for. So that, I suppose that helps. It was maybe 10 minutes as opposed to if it was some long, normal wedding ceremony that early in the morning after a late night, and where I had to do a lot more talking. But it went well. The game went well, and the wedding was excellent, too.
It is always interesting when you're presiding over somebody else's wedding, but it's especially stressful when it is in an intimate wedding. The total number of people who attended this ceremony were?
It was, including the couple getting married and myself, it was 8.
Okay. That's always interesting. And then tell the folks what you did after the wedding.
So after the wedding, then we all went out to breakfast, and the couple that got married was kind enough to treat all of us for breakfast.
Wow.
Yeah, even though, despite our protests, but they said, if it was a regular wedding, then they would be the ones paying for us to eat at the reception following the wedding, and so then we let them pay. That was fine by us. So that was the reception. We went to a nice diner down the street. It was about maybe 8:30 in the morning. We had a good breakfast, then we got ready to all go watch some football together that afternoon.
And then you watched football with the couple. Couple all day, correct?
Yep. Then we met. We went our separate ways to regroup for the day, and then we met up again a couple hours later at about 12:30 at our favorite sports bar in town, and spent the next 4 hours there watching football before we all went our separate ways again.
And just so the folks know, this couple did this very small wedding on the beach in Daytona Beach with only 8 people. Why?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just their style. They're laid back and simple people. They lived here originally, or were living here before. They're not from here, but they were living here. Moved for a job back in February. The husband is a former coworker of mine, and so they wanted to get married before they moved out of Daytona Beach. We couldn't quite time it out, so they came back down here on an off weekend and did it this way, and then they'll have a larger get-together with family and friends down the road.
Obviously, Luke Morrow's with us. Luke will only be with us for a couple more seconds. Let's see how far I can go without mentioning the Vikings and their winning and the Jets' loss. Is it weird, you know, when you know the people so well, you know, so that you hang out with them afterwards, which is obviously not exactly the norm sometimes. Is it weird to, like, not start hysterically laughing during the vows or something, you know, because you may have slipped in, like, an inside joke or something into the speech?
Right, yeah. You know, it's interesting. In this case, because you know them better, and just because of the way this couple is, you know, their vows were sweet, they're really nice, they were well done, but they also, you know, were jokey, and obviously the whole ceremony was laid back and everything. But, you know, even outside of the vows, when I was writing my when I was putting the ceremony together and putting together what I was going to say, it was a lot easier because I could fit in more background information, not only about them, but about everybody at the wedding, you know, the group of friends that we are, stories, jokes, whatever it may be, where the wedding I did earlier this summer at our ballpark were two strangers. I had nothing to go off of except of more generic sayings, expressions, quotes, whatever it may be about love, relationships, marriage, that sort of thing. So it's easier to put together the wedding and what I'm going to say when I have that background, and you could be a little more jokey and use those personal anecdotes compared to just having a more general, broad ceremony. So in that sense, it was different and probably better.
I did it. I got through this whole interview without having to mention the horrible Jets performance once. Luke Morrow, my Sunday Sprint co-host, the voice of Stetson football, and a guy who presided over a wedding on Sunday morning. Thank you, sir, for coming on Teeing It Up.
Anytime.
We're now joined by Ryan Ballingy from Golf News Net, Yahoo Devil Ball Golf Blog, on this sad day, the day after we lost the King, Arnold Palmer. Hi, Ryan. How are you?
I'm all right, Jeremy. How are you?
I'm good. For so many of us, Arnie means so many different things. For me, Arnie makes me think of my grandfather. When you hear the words Arnold Palmer, what does that make you think of?
Oddly enough, it makes me think of home. My wife's family is from a town one over from Latrobe. It's called Derry. I'm actually here right now. And so when I think of Arnold Palmer, I think of Latrobe, and I think of coming to my wife's hometown, a place I love in western Pennsylvania, a place I really enjoy and feel connected to in a strange way. And I think of Latrobe Country Club and all the places in this town that are named for Arnold Palmer are here because of Arnold Palmer. And that's why I came up here today to spend some time here and kind of get a sense of maybe how this town moves forward from here.
I think that's a good point because a lot of people may not realize this. Latrobe, for all intents and purposes, should be like, you know, that town subheading should be Arnold Palmer's town because he is so much Latrobe. And as you mentioned, the airport's named after him, and it sounds like a whole bunch of other stuff's named after him or has his name on it stamped in some other way.
The airport was named after him in 1999. It used to be just the Latrobe Airport. And he owns a car dealership here. He's owned one here since 1981. He bought Latrobe Country Club in 1971. Obviously, he's been a lifelong Latrobe resident going back to 1929. So this is where he has become famous. This is where he has made investments of his time and money. This is where he has spent the bulk of his life. And there's a lot of outpouring here today, and I'm sure there will be for weeks and a long time to come. about his life and what he meant to this area and how proud people are that Arnold Palmer is from Latrobe, Pennsylvania.
There's a lot of, there's a couple people who have said to me who are, 28, same age as me. I know Arnie. I get that he had a huge impact on golf, but I'm, kind of confused about why this outpouring has been so gigantic as it's been. And I think a lot of people from this generation don't realize the impact Arnie had on society, on the way that you market yourself as a retired athlete, the way that you can make yourself a brand. He became a branded athlete in a way that no one had quite become before.
Yeah, I think that the big draw to Arnold Palmer for the generation before you and I is that he came of age when television came of age, when televised sport came of age. And so he connected with a lot of people in a very personal way in an individual sport that focused on your face, that focused on your torso, what you looked like, how you expressed yourself. It was not like you saw a baseball player's face in black and white TV in the 50s. It's not like you ever really saw a football player's face on the field. But that happened in golf, and people connected with him because he was so different than the other golfers out there at the time. He was expressive. He took risks. He was unpredictable, good looking. He made for great television, and people connected with him in that way. He drove millions of people to play golf because they realized it was a sport that this guy that looked a lot like them and came from a place a lot like them, that was what he did for a living. And I think then on top of it, as years went by and he kind of became this familiar pitch man, kind of the dad style pitch man for so many things, people connected with him more after his career. And within the sport of golf, so many people are envious of what he accomplished and grateful for the kind of person that he was. And I think that just piles on to why people celebrate his life and mourn his death, that he had a profound effect on the sport and for many people on them individually, even if it was a chance encounter one time, it meant that much to them. And I don't know that we're going to have athletes like that in our generation because they're different. They make more money. They're more removed from us. They take less social stand. I mean, it's different. And so I think in part it is an outpouring about Arnold Palmer almost entirely. But the other part of it is that the greats that we've lost in the last 12 months, I mean, think about Palmer, Ali, Gordie Howe. I mean, three of the greatest athletes we've ever known. And they were important athletes too, because not only were they great at sports, their individual sport, but they also were a fabric, part of our fabric as a society and for better, trying to change things for the better. So I think that all adds up, and that hopefully explains why so many people are mourning or upset.
You met Arnie once, you said today, on social media. Tell us about that time.
It was June 29th, 2014. I was here in Latrobe. I'm in Derry, but is in Latrobe, the Latrobe Elks Golf Club. And mind you that, like, every Elks, Moose, American Legion, Slovak Society, they all have 9 and 18-hole golf courses here in Western Pennsylvania because of Arnold Palmer, because he inspired them to play golf. So we were at the Latrobe Elks, which, by the way, Arnold Palmer is still a member at. I don't know how that happened, but he is a member, and I've seen the registration. And he had come over completely unannounced. No one told anybody this was happening. Came to this charity golf tournament to benefit Latrobe Elks' head pro, who's been battling Parkinson's, and fortunately he's improved his condition, but going through a really tough time, trying to raise money for him, raise money for research into Parkinson. Came over, and word spread quickly around the course that he was there. People came off the course, off the round. I was one of those people, just to come up and meet him, shake his hand, say hi, tell a quick story, put two and two together. Oh, you know, and so and so, my uncle, you know, this and that, my cousin. And he could not have been more magnanimous with his time. He couldn't have been more gracious, took pictures with people, signed things, whatever you needed, he did it. He did it with a smile on his face, looked you in the eye. And he's not that big of a guy, but the most important thing, I think, in that interaction was the strength of his hands and how big they were. I mean, I'm a pretty large-sized guy. I think I have pretty right. large hands. His enveloped mine, and that was my big takeaway. That he gave a really strong, great handshake. And to think about how those hands strangled a golf club, it had to have for his entire life, and how much force he could put into the ball with those hands, that's something I'll never forget.
Talking to Ryan Ballengee, my one quick Arnie story is that I went to the practice round at the 2012 Masters, and it was Tuesday, and my parents and I had gone to take a picture out front by the flag, by the famous flag and flower outpost. And as we're walking back towards the course, a bunch of SUVs just came flying by, and I look up and there's Arnie smiling, thumbs up, hand out the window, and I yelled, "Hi, Arnie." And he looked at me and smiled and gave that thumbs up, and the driver kept on driving down the road towards the clubhouse. And I posted the picture on Facebook of a van, which is as quick as any of us could get a camera out to take a picture of Arnie, picture of this van driving down the road inside the gates of Augusta National. But, that was my one moment. That was my 3 seconds or however long it was, and I felt that, for those 3 seconds, Arnold Palmer was in my life. So that's my Arnie story. It's not, like so many others, but it is special in its own unique way. Arnie brought golf to the mainstream, as we've talked about, and yesterday at the Tour Championship, Rory won $11.5 million, which doesn't happen if it's not for Tiger. But that doesn't happen if it's not for Arnie. And, what a month he's had, Ryan, to finally get his putting back somewhat close to the Rory that, that putting is when it's hot. And I think all the U.S. Ryder Cup players are probably sitting there going, uh-oh, he's getting hot.
Yeah, fortunately, he can only be responsible for 5 points. Thank goodness. at most. Week at Hazeltine. But Rory's been playing some wonderful golf. I mean, the ball striking's always been there. From tee to green's been wonderful. His short irons have been a liability throughout the last 3 or 4 years. 9-iron pitching wedge, 8-iron. He hits massive drives, 340, 350, and leaves an uninspiring wedge to 25 feet and hits a 2-putt and just makes – he turns potential great rounds off the tee into duds. And he hasn't been doing that. And that's in part because he's putting better, like you said. He's got a new coach, got a new putter, got a new outlook, has a better awareness of what he's been doing wrong in his stroke so he can self-correct a little bit better. And he's also hitting some really great approach shots. And I think that in part stems from having more confidence with the putter to believe that he can make them. And he's said this, and I think most any high-level golfer would tell you that when you put pressure on a certain aspect of the game, that pressure extends out throughout the golf course because you have to then try to feel like you're trying to overcompensate. And then when you try to do that, more pressure, and the scores reflect that. Now he feels like he's got a lot of confidence with the putter. He can kind of smooth a 7-iron in there. He can smooth a wedge in there and not feel like he's got to stick it to 2 feet to make the putt to convert. I think that's a big deal, and I don't think this is going to be permanent. It's not like Rory's going to all of a sudden win 20 of the next 30 tournaments that he plays. But when he feels this way and when he putts this way, he's the best golfer on the planet. And I wouldn't go so far as to say some friends and colleagues on Twitter might say, and it's not even close. It's close. I mean, Dustin Johnson's best and Jason Day's best are right up there. Jordan Spieth at his moxiest is up there. But Rory McIlroy is probably the most complete player when the putter works because the rest of it comes together.
All right, so now we fast forward to this Ryder Cup, which is going to have, I think, you know, I think if this was the President's Cup and it started on Thursday, I think Arnie's passing may have had a larger effect. But I actually don't think by the time we get to Friday and this gets to be digested for a couple of days, I think this will turn positive, and I think it'll be more of a, hey, let's use his spirit and let's come together and try to get this done. I don't think this will be tears shed left and right, people absolutely distraught.
I don't think people will be over it. I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon.
Right.
But
I
think that the initial reaction will have calmed down to the point that we can talk about one of the more important events in golf and be excited about it and not feel guilty being excited about it. I don't think there's going to be some kind of muted crowd at Hazeltine. I'm sure people will be genuflective and be sad a little bit, and there will be remembrances planned throughout the week, I believe, for Arnold Palmer, and I think that will be done appropriately. But by the time we get to Friday morning and this thing gets started, people are going to be riled up. We waited 2 years for this, and I think people will be excited to see if a more experienced American team, the one retooled after the task force and all that stuff, can beat a relatively inexperienced European team on home soil in what sounds like, at least in concept, a layup to end this skid. And if they don't, then there's a lot of hand-wringing and a lot of pointing fingers to go around at what went wrong or what in the hell has to happen for it to go right.
You know, So here's my take. I love the Ryan Moore pick. I want a Bubba. But after that playoff yesterday and after the whole down the stretch period where he made putt after putt after putt, you couldn't not take Ryan Moore. On paper, I agree. This is definitely a strong U.S. team. I am very nervous about Friday morning. I believe that the U.S. has to get off to a good start, has to get positive momentum, and can't be overwhelmed on that first tee. You and I have both seen the pictures of that first tee. And luckily for you, you'll get to be there in person and see that with your own two eyes. And I think that if the U.S. gets off to a good start and the nerves get to guys like Matthew Fitzpatrick and Chris Wood and guys who haven't been in this spot before, Thomas Peters, this is where the U.S. can kind of assert themselves. I don't think it'll be a runaway. I don't think it'll be a blowout. The Ryder Cup just tends to always be close. But to me, I believe that at the end of the day, the U.S. will win this Ryder Cup probably by 3 points maybe, which is a fairly sizable win if you think about recent history. But I think 3 points is doable. And, you know, some people will have to sweat it on Sunday, but I think the atmosphere will be unbelievable. And I think that the strength of the U.S. veterans will truly shine over all these European rookies.
I hope that's the case. I mean, I think that American win is kind of important in the series. I think it's a good thing for the Americans to win every now and then. They don't have to win every time, but to win every now and then. I feel like it would be a good validation for the American side. Hey, we're recommitted to this thing. We're starting to figure it out. Good for the rivalry. They can give the Europeans something to talk about with task forces and all this stuff. I believe that the American experience will come through, but you got to remember also a lot of that American experience is bad experience. It's getting your ass handed to you. So how do you transform bad experience into good experience and something you only do every 2 years? And if you've done it more than once in the last 6 years, you have lost each time. So that's my one concern is how do the 10 experienced members of the U.S. team turn that into a positive? Because none of them really know how or really don't have the background to do it, except J.B. Holmes, who was on the winning team in 08, and that's the only team he's been on. So I'm curious about that. I'm curious what role that will play. But the one thing that stands out to me about the inexperience on Europe is something Martin Keimer said a couple weeks ago. I think it was the European Open. He said this, that historically or statistically, if you send out two rookies in a foursomes match, so the alternate shot, they have a 7% chance of winning. There are 6 rookies on the European team. You have to send out 8 players every session. So you either send out at least two teams with a rookie on it in the foursome session, both of them, or you have to send out one team with two rookies, and you are inviting them to get slaughtered. So what does Darren Clark do? Does he give up a point a session and just let some experienced American team throttle them? Or does he try to manage rookies and experienced players trying to create new teams and seeing if that works and potentially jeopardizing 4 points instead of two?
Yeah, that will be interesting. Obviously, this is not the President's Cup. This is a completely blind draw, so it is kind of luck of the draw, so to speak, as to who you wind up paired with. For me, the key guy is Jordan Spieth. Jordan Spieth, for me, for the Americans, this is. Jordan Spieth and Matt Kuchar, I believe, need to play consistent golf. Spieth has been inconsistent. Kuchar is Mr. Consistency. If Jordan can find his groove and Kuchar plays like Matt Kuchar, I think that's a great stabilizing force. I'm not concerned about Phil Mickelson. I'm not concerned about Dustin. Zach Johnson's play has been a little inconsistent. Patrick Reed will be juiced up as long as he can stay calm. I'm not concerned about him. But for some reason, Mr. Spieth concerns me. For Europe, I believe that Martin Keimer has to play well, and I believe that Lee Westwood has to dip into the tank and dig out something, because I believe we're going to get some really, really poor golf shots out of some of these European rookies. And if Europe wants to win this, they need to have smart pairings, you know, put a veteran with a rookie, in my opinion, like Graham McDowell did with Victor Dubuisson back in 2014. If Darren Clark does stuff like that, I think that's how you get in the groove. Because to me, as long as all the Europeans play on Friday, come Saturday, I think this is a whole different ball game. And if we're looking at a 5-3 lead, you know, 4-4, 5-3 coming up after Friday's matches, I think this is anyone's ball game.
I'm reluctant to give overall predictions about the Ryder Cup because I feel like so much of it is momentum based that
right.
You just never know. I mean, it could quickly spiral out of control, or it could be safe. It could be individually encapsulated. You just don't know. I think the most interesting player for me on Europe is actually there are two. It's one's Rory McIlroy because he seems at this point the leader. Is he ready to be the leader of the team and go on a tear and score 4 or 5 points? The other is Danny Willett, who is a rookie, but he's the Masters champion. So he's kind of in this weird place where there are expectations on him because he won a major this year, whether he backed into it or not is your discussion. But he won a major this year. He's been great in Europe the last couple of years. And yet, since winning the Masters, he has one top 10 finish, and that was a second place of the Italian Open. So he's kind of struggling, but he should be expected to play well because he's a major champion. How does he embrace that? How does he handle that?
Yeah, and you know, there's a lot of nerves. Look at you know, Webb Simpson back in 2014 was a major champion, and he showed those nerves on the first tee. I know that you are you know, technical predictions can be tough because, as you said, it is so much momentum-based. But do you have a winner from these two sides? Would you like to make an overall prediction as to who wins the Ryder Cup?
I think the U.S. will win. I think the experience will play well. I think that a couple of different motivations will play here. One, this is most likely Phil Mickelson's last American Ryder Cup as a player. It's Tiger Woods, the vice captain, so that era is kind of ending. You've got guys who are hungry to win after getting their butts kicked, after melting down 4 years ago when they had it in their hand. There are a lot of things built up in this for the American side that give them a reason to just wallop Europe. I don't think it'll play out that way, but I think they'll win, and I think that's going to be important for the series. So I like the United States.
Yeah. And I also like the U.S., as I said earlier. Look, I would love to see the internationals win the President's Cup. I think it would be for that competition as well. Finally, do you have a winner for the Celebrity Ryder Cup?
Nobody. Nobody wins with that. They just shouldn't do it. I don't know what they're thinking. But hey, good on them for trying to turn a quick buck, I suppose, get more people to come over to Hazeltine. But the Ryder Cup is more than enough for people. They do not care to watch celebrities play golf, I don't think, except at Pebble Beach and St. Andrews and the European Tour, and that's about it. But so I guess we're all losers.
How about the captain's match on Thursday? Any pick there?
I think it's going to be that's tough. I'll take Darren just because he is.
Off injury. Darren hasn't played well here.
Yeah, I'm going to take Darren just because he's a little bit healthier. I don't know where Davis is at with his hips and stuff, so we'll have to see.
And right now, and by the way, Ryan will be with us for Tiger's return in 2 weeks. Does this return happen? Are you on Teeing It Up 2 weeks from today?
I think it's going to happen. I haven't seen anything to suggest that he's not showing up, so I'm gonna stick with it. I think he's gonna do it.
That's Ryan Ballingy. We thank him for coming on, and we'll see if he's right, and he's joining us 2 weeks from today. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Jeremy. See ya.
Safe travels. Enjoy the Ryder Cup.
Thanks. Bye.
Yep. We will see you for a special edition of Teeing It Up tomorrow night. Tomorrow night on SoundCloud at 7-something. And on Blog Talk Radio at 11 p.m. Eastern Time. You'll see what that's about tomorrow night. Have a great night, everybody. See ya.